Good morning, it's 8:39, Finger Lakes Morning News. It's time to get heart healthy today with Finger Lakes Health. Kimberly Lockwood's here. Good morning.
Morning, Ted.
Any news or notes? I know Geneva Urgent Care expanded hours began
yesterday,
this week, right?
Yeah, yesterday they began. We're now open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at the Geneva Urgent Care location at Finger Lakes Health Commons on Preemption Road.
All right. Anything else going on as far as events or anything? Or?
We're just gearing up for our spring series, thinking about what we're going to be doing for Dine and Discuss, Walk and Talk, things like that.
Okay. And one of the things coming up in the spring is cardiac prehab. So introduce our guest.
Yes. Today we have Dr. Joe Gomez. He's our Director of Cardiology Services for Finger Lakes Health, and he's going to talk about cardiology and our cardiac prehab event that's coming up.
All right. Welcome back. It's good to be here.
Ted, great to see you. How are you?
Good. Remind us how the idea for this program started. We always hear about rehab, taking care of problems after the fact, and whether, I don't know if this was your idea or developed through colleagues of yours.
All mine, Ted. No, just kidding. So what we thought of, what we kind of looked at about 4 or 5 years ago is that we know that the cardiac rehabilitation program works. People that attend class, participate in some exercise program, participate in large amounts of educational programs, discussions about different risk factors for coronary disease, ways to kind of prevent problems from happening, do much better than people that didn't participate. The only problem with cardiac rehab is, by definition, you have to survive a cardiac event or have a cardiac event, coronary artery disease or the equivalent, to get into the program. So we know that a lot of people don't get that, quote, second chance. And to kind of prevent the tragedy of sudden cardiac death as a way people find out they have coronary disease, we said, let's kind of take things from the beginning and try to work on primary prevention as opposed to secondary prevention.
And one of the things that made that difficult, we were talking about this before we went on the air, is that there's no single magic bullet test. A lot of conditions you can have a screening for, and either you have it or you don't, or you're prone to it. But with cardiac problems, it's a whole host of interrelated factors that lead you to be more at risk.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, we talk about screening for cervical cancer with, the pap smear, obviously screening for breast cancer with mammography. And now, the colorectal specialists and oncologists have done such a great job of colon cancer screening, whether it be with a colonoscopy or, some type of home surveillance kit. But, from a cardiac standpoint, we really need to focus on a lot of, I don't want to say little, but a lot of risk factors, because we, as you mentioned very nicely, we don't have that, silver bullet screen. Maybe someday we will, where we can just kind of run the Star Trek tricorder up and down and say, yep, you have a 30% blockage in your right-sided coronary artery, and let's make sure it doesn't increase. But right now we don't have that, so we have to look at risk factors. And, our big buzzword in prevention is, or buzzwords, are risk factor modification. So that's what we talk about, as our screening tool.
So why don't these risk factors present themselves? A lot of times when you're on the path to some condition, there's evidence of it. But like you say, you can have significant artery blockage and it doesn't give any symptoms at all. Does the body just compensate for it up to the point where it can't anymore?
If you think about what happens when someone has a heart attack, oftentimes it's not a steady progression of blockage in the coronary artery. Another way to say that is you can wake up or you can go to bed with a blockage in one of the big arteries that's only about 20%, which is not going to cause any symptoms whatsoever and not going to cause any problems. And then overnight, that blockage can go from 20% to 99% or more percent. That's just the pathophysiology of a myocardial infarction, of a heart attack. The challenge is, how do we detect that 20% blockage that doesn't have a lot of symptoms, doesn't have any symptoms, unless you're climbing Mount Everest and get a little chest pain at the summit, and then be able to initiate strategies to keep that 20% blockage, at a small degree.
I think the public is aware of some risk factors and not others. There's a testimonial I was looking at on the Finger Lakes Health website, one of your early cardiac prehab, students, if you want to call it that, that said she didn't think she was at risk because she had okay cholesterol, but it turned out she needed a quadruple bypass because she had some other sort of condition.
Right, right. So, you know, I think it's an A to Z thing, and I don't think there's any one risk factor that dominates, you know. So I think it's taken in toto, and certainly someone with three or four risk factors is much more worrisome to us than someone with one risk factor. But you have to know, you know, what the risk factors are. So, you know, again, in no particular order, you know, I think we tend to think about the things that develop through some of our own good work or bad work, and some of the things that we're just kind of left to play the hand that we're dealt with. You know, that one certainly would be family history and bad cardiac genetics. You know, again, we've mentioned this in the past. I think if you fast forward 50, 60 years, you know, the whole concept of gene therapy will be full blown, and we will certainly look at prevention in a different way. But right now, you know, I think in our lifetime, it's about knowing family history, recognizing when coronary disease has developed early on in one's family history, and then, you know, recognizing that as a significant risk factor. Not much we can do about that, except be more aggressive with the other risk factors.
So who is a candidate for cardiac prehab?
So, cardiac prehab, I think the short answer is anyone who has the desire to be aggressive in educating themselves and hopefully educating their family, their friends about maintaining a healthy cardiac lifestyle and hopefully, you know, preventing the development of coronary disease.
So even if you don't have a risk factor now, you'll learn what they are and learn how to not get them in the future, or if you do start to get some, to be able to recognize that you might be in risk.
No question about it. You know, I wish in my perfect world, you know, we have a bunch of young, motivated people who have no cardiac risk factors. By definition, people are going to develop cardiac risk factors, and if they're lucky enough to only have the risk factor of age develop, they're certainly going to know someone in their family, in their neighborhood, in their workplace that does have risk factors and is going to develop problems.
So take us through this course. How long is it, and what are some of the topics you cover?
So we've pared down the course to 6 weeks. We're going to run it on consecutive Mondays. It's a two-hour class. We try to do at least 1 hour of lecture, focusing on little simple science, simple anatomy. And then the second half, we try to get some participation. Sometimes we bring in patients who have unfortunately developed coronary disease, talk about their experiences. We try to get people comfortable with what the actual testing that we do, whether it be in the stress testing laboratory or in the cardiac cath lab. You know, again, so people have at least somewhat at their fingertips a working knowledge of what we can do, what we can't do, and what we need to get better at.
Dr. Joe Gomez is with us, cardiac prehab program. When does it start?
Yep, so we're going to start this coming Monday. I think we still have a few seats available. It's going to be in the Seneca Falls area. You know, if we got a tidal wave of applicants this week, I'm sure we can throw some more chairs in, so the more the merrier. And, you know, I think for 6 weeks, for 12 hours, I think at the end of the program, you know, not only do we try to have fun, we try to keep it interesting for everyone, but I think people feel very, very comfortable, you know, being able to talk in an educated way, you know, about the ticker.
You're telling me off air before we started recently in a professional journal, there was an article talking about diet factors, and there's still... It's always interesting to me that we still know so little about food. What's good, what's bad, what's the best diet? And when it comes to cardiac health, I guess there's still not 100% consensus on, you know, we hear about the Mediterranean or Italian diet, heavy on vegetables and olive oil and stuff.
Right. Yeah, you know, so again, you know, getting back to risk factors, the things that develop when we develop an unhealthy lifestyle, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, right, all tied into obesity, you know, and the resultant sedentary lifestyle. But, you know, one of the things, obviously I'd be remiss not talking about smoking cessation, but in my observations, you know, we've done a very, very good job. We need to continue, and we need to continue to harp on the fact that smoking, you know, is such a dangerous issue. But we've done a better job of educating and are seeing some results in terms of smoking cessation. What we're not seeing, you know, is a decrease in the development of obesity, you know, in our community. You know, that's it's obviously multifactorial. I think from a recommendation standpoint, we are still, as you mentioned, we're still puzzled as to say this is what we think you should eat to maintain a healthy weight and to maintain a healthy blood pressure and cholesterol, etc. I think if you polled 50 cardiologists and people that really dig into the question of obesity and obesity management, you might get 20 to 25 different game plans as to the best strategy.
In terms of obesity and sedentary lifestyle, if somebody says, okay, it's time, I've been sedentary, I'm an office warrior, I want to get active, what's the way to do it right without overdoing it?
Yeah, no, I think speaking to your physician about, you know, is it reasonable for me to just begin an exercise program, and, you know, how do I, what do I need to focus on in terms of the way I eat to make myself feel better? Especially if it's been a while, you know, since you addressed these issues. So, you know, obviously we are in this for the long run. This is certainly not a sprint, but a marathon. And you want to take time to do this cautiously, progressively, and something that's going to put you in a position to succeed. You know, the last thing we want is for someone to hit things hard for a week or two, get frustrated, not feel good, not like the way they're depriving themselves of their previous diet, get frustrated, throw up their hands, and go back to where they were.
So in terms of the future of your profession, do you think that gene exploration is where it's going to go in terms of finding genetic markers?
I do, both in terms of risk factors, you know, and in terms of the way we treat problems. For example, you know, if someone has high blood pressure, in addition to trying to get weight down, in addition to trying to get somebody to exercise, the way we treat them with medications is more of a downstream effect. We treat problems at the kidney level. We treat things at the blood vessels in the periphery level. Once gene therapy, or at least the hope is with gene therapy, we will say this person has gene X-1 TAC2 that sets them up for high blood pressure. Let's supplement that gene or combat that gene and attack the problem further upstream. At least that's the theory.
So you could give somebody a blood pressure medication before their blood pressure gets high, or
you know, I think what will happen is we will give someone the gene equivalent.
Okay.
Yeah, in a pill form, right? They will take a pill to prevent the development of a risk factor like high blood pressure or high cholesterol. The way I look at it now is, you know, we give medicines just to level the genetic playing field, but obviously it would be more efficient, more effective to attack the problem at the beginning as opposed to dealing with its effects.
So whether you think you might have some risk factors or whether you just want to learn more about what they might be and how to live a healthy lifestyle, cardiac prehab, remind us again, that starts this coming Monday.
This coming Monday, we're going to run it from 5 to 7 o'clock in Seneca Falls. You know, I welcome anyone who has any inkling, any desire to learn a little bit more about how to live a healthy lifestyle. You know, just come to our first class. I suspect if you come to the first class, you'll want to finish the 6-week series.
Well, and I know, like I said, there was that one testimonial. I know a young athlete, when you screened local high school athletes, it was found to have some factors. So there have been at least a few people whose lives may have been saved by taking this course.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to kill a couple hours. There's not much in terms of basketball going on Monday nights now, as you know that, right? So Monday nights, which you know, was a big factor in our planning stage. So I think it's a good way to spend a Monday evening.
I don't know, watching SU play might give you a heart attack.
No question about it.
Be careful about that. Dr. Joe Gomez, thanks. Always good to talk heart health with
Absolutely,
you. Appreciate
Ted,
the visit.
Thank you.
Kimberly, thank you.
Thanks, Ted. And can I just add
let me turn your microphone on. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Can I just add real quick, to register for the cardiac prehab, you can call 315-787-4053, or you can register online at flhealth.org.
Ah, thank you very much. We left that part out. So thanks very much to both of you. As we get healthy with Finger Lakes Health now at 8:53, Finger Lakes Morning News.